Good morning and welcome to Hometown Alaska at our new time at 10 a.m. each Monday. We're joining this time slot that will always mean Monday through Thursday, a local community show. So I am the host of Hometown Alaska. My name is Kathleen McCoy. Today's show is a check-in on a big news story from late August. Then UAA's Chancellor Kathy Sandeen proposed a restructuring of UAA athletics that included eliminating women's gymnastics, men's hockey, and the men's and women's alpine and Nordic ski teams. The budget cutback stories out of the University of Alaska over the past 18 months have been grim. Not only sports teams were cut, but entire academic departments have been eliminated, with faculty left to teach out students still in their program. Uncertainty is disruptive and scary, but in light of the state's declining resources, a path that had to be walked. In the case of the four sports teams that UAA proposed to be eliminated next year, the UAA Regents decided in September that if they could fundraise for their own expenses on a timeline and with real numbers, perhaps they could survive. Today, 4 months into their fundraising endeavors, we find out how they are doing. Today's guests include UAA's ski, hockey, and gymnastics coaches, basically on the front lines of trying to save their sports with help from the public. We welcome your questions and comments throughout the hour. I'm going to share our numbers now, and I'll share them several times. If you're in Anchorage, you can give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And we'll be checking our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And also, I just like to remind people that lots of the topics we talk about, we'll put relevant links on the Hometown Alaska webpage where we do a promo for the show. So some of the things we talk about today, the websites that these folks have created to help fundraise, we've got links to those on our site. And of course, you can find them on their sites too. So it's just a way of spreading the information. So let's get to our guests. I am going to introduce them with what I found that's out there in the world about their bios, but they may have things to add. So I'm going to start with Matt Curley, who is the hockey coach. And Matt, I understand you took this job in April of 2018. And so you're a relative newcomer. You have a pretty extensive background in hockey, including, you know, playing in college, being an assistant coach at another university, a head coach in Salzburg in the Alps. That sounds really exotic and pretty fun. You've also been really active with the USA Hockey Development Team. So you've got a strong background in hockey. You're one of the youngest, at least at this point, when you were hired, one of the youngest coaches in Division I hockey at age 35. What have we left out there? What do you want to add there? This is for Matt.
No, I don't think there's anything that you left out. I've been very fortunate and blessed. The game has given me a lot, everything in my life, from experiences to even meeting my wife. So I've been very fortunate, and I certainly include having the opportunity to come up here a little over 2 years ago as high on that list of the opportunities that have been granted me through this game.
Yeah, and for a variety of reasons, which I don't fully grasp and understand because it involves leagues and things, you're sort of in a rebuilding mode. Would you say that for the hockey team?
Yeah, no, it's certainly true. You know, when I undertook the job a few years ago, it was kind of a transitional period for us. The program had obviously not done very well on the ice, and I think part of the opportunity that was presented to me was to come in and try to right that ship, and had a great staff aboard to try to do that, and I think we made some good headways in that short time since. But obviously we've had a lot of challenges thrown at us, you know, moving from the Sullivan to our on-campus facility, our dismissal, if you will, from our current league, which is the WCHA, and their decision to move on away from us. And on top of that, with our current situation with our university and the decision that they've made. So certainly that rebuilding was short-lived, if you will, based on the things that have surrounded us. But, you know, like I said, I felt like we're making some good headway and very happy with what we were able to do in that short time.
Yeah. And I think you moved your whole family up here. You have little kids, right?
Yeah, I do. I got a little girl, an 8-year-old little girl, Tess, who's in third grade, and a little guy named Jack, who's in first grade, and of course my wife, Samantha. But we made the trek up here from Austria to Alaska back in April of 2018, and have loved every minute of it up here, the people, the community. I'm from northern New York originally, just north of the Adirondack Mountains, so the climate, the type of people, the overall environment really suits me well, and I've really been very blessed and fortunate to have the experience to be a part of the Anchorage community and live up here, and I know my family has enjoyed it as well.
That's great. I'm going to move to Marie-Sophie Bogash, who is the interim head coach. I think that's still correct, right, Sophie? Interim head coach beginning in 2021. You have a really interesting story. You came from Germany, Schwarzenbach am Wied, which I probably mispronounced that, but you came to UAA actually to compete as a student athlete. I understand, you know, vaults, bars, and floor exercises where you worked. You've also were an honoree with the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation All-American team. You graduated from UAA with a 4.0 and a bachelor's in aviation technology. You're a professional pilot. You have your own plane. You've flown for Regal Air here in Alaska. So interesting. And you also used your opportunity at UAA to get a Master's of Science in Interdisciplinary Studies with a concentration in management, adult education, and aviation just this year in 2020. So, Marie-Sophie, what have I left out?
I guess the only thing that I have to add is the reason I came back to coaching is actually the master that I did at UAA. So I got hired as a graduate assistant coach in fall of 2018. Which was very, very exciting, and I loved every minute of it. And so I really wanted to stay on this year, even after the departure of Tanya Ho. And I was really fortunate to be presented with the opportunity. But, of course, just a couple weeks in, it all went south, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, you're hanging in there. Let me also get Sparky Anderson introduced to our audience, and I can see we're getting some calls in. One of them is directed at you, Sparky, but I need to introduce you before we can take calls. Your background is also really interesting. You share a field with me, journalism. You got your bachelor's at the University of Nevada, Reno. But you've been, there was always skiing, a through line of skiing for you. You were certainly you've been at UAA for more than 13 years as coach for the Nordic and Alpine teams. You began in 2007, I guess, and before UAA, you were at the Alyeska Ski Club and as a head coach and program director. You were a head ski coach at Brown University for 4 years, an alpine ski coach at a school in New Hampshire. And it looks like you studied piloting also while at UAA. So, Sparky, what did I leave out?
that pretty much covers it. That's a good backdrop.
Yeah, and you live in Girdwood, a ski town, so that makes a lot of sense. And I think we'll hear a little bit more about your family as we go along. You told me a little bit about your daughter and her commitment to your team. So I'm going to go ahead and take a call for Sparky to see what our audience is wanting to ask you. This is Anna. Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
So what would you it sounds like you want to ask Sparky a question or talk about Sparky?
Yeah, I just had a question for Sparky. So I'm a student at UAA right now. I'm also a former student athlete, and I've seen a huge push to save the ski team. But I was just wondering, why is it so important, not only for the university, but for the community to save this team?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is that we drive enrollment at the university, so we boost the enrollment. You know, half the kids that come to UAA pay their own way. You know, we're we are an economic driver for the university. But not only that, we provide examples, role models, we volunteer. There's a lot of reasons. And I think something that is overlooked once in a while, too, is that we recruit people to the state, which is something that the state's been trying to do for years, to get people to come and stay here to for the workforce, quality of the level of the workforce. But, we bring a lot of people into the state, and those people stay here, like, Zuzi Rogers, who is a physical therapist that now employs, I think, 15 or 20 people. Tom Yontanen, who came up and is is now a attorney at ConocoPhillips. So there's a lot of examples of that, and so it's just the work that we're doing for the state, and I really feel like that we're sort of a servant of the state, but it's important that we continue our work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's your question, Ann.
I do have one more follow-up question for that. If I were to get involved or try to help the ski team, what would be the best way?
The best way right now is our fundraising campaign is online, and it's 314er.com. That's 314er.com, and all the information's on there. News articles, what we've done, how to contribute, how to help, and you can see our totals and where we stand currently. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. Great question.
So thanks, Ann. And what I'd like to do with our guests is to go to each of you and tell us exactly what is your situation, what is your arrangement with the university right now. I'll start with you, Marie-Sophie. What is your situation? You're fundraising, but how much? When's the deadline? What happens if you meet your goal? So tell us a little bit about that, Marie, with the gymnastics team.
For the gymnastics team, as I believe with all the other sports as well, the deadline that was set is February 15 of 2021. And we have the goal of $888,000, half of that in cash, and half of that in pledges, and that is an average of 2 years of our budget.
Okay, so, and I guess, how are you trying to raise those funds?
We have a fundraising campaign up as well, of course. We have been working closely with the Collegiate Gymnastics Growth Initiative. There's multiple ways to donate to us. We've also had some merchandise sales. We're launching a virtual competition. We're also hoping to kind of come up with some other creative ideas. We just had a Be a Perfect 10 challenge, the Mask Up and Handstand challenge on social media, where we've been trying to gather outreach by having a little challenge of putting a mask on in a handstand and donating and tagging people, which has been kind of a really neat little experience to just kind of spread the word out there. And we're about an eighth of the way there.
An eighth of the way, excuse me, I got a little froggy throat this morning. An eighth of the way to 800, did you say 888,000?
That's correct.
Okay, and that represents 2 years, roughly, of your budget. If you met that goal on February 15th, is it your understanding then that, your sport would continue for the next 2 years?
Yes, however, Chancellor Sandin did indicate that she is hoping UAA will be in a much better and much more stable place financially. And in the Board of Regents meeting back in September, it was discussed that they hope to absorb our team for years to come after these 2 years of a gap period.
Oh, I see. So they're actually optimistic, despite the state's financial situation and the cutbacks to the university, they feel that things will be in better shape. Okay, that's kind of encouraging, I guess, because I was trying to figure out, is this, will it be something you have to do every year? And I think we'll talk about that later in the show, about how perhaps fundraising will become a bigger part of all collegiate athletics going forward. Let's go to you, Matt Curlieve, with the hockey team. What is your goal? What is your understanding with the university?
Yeah, so similar to the other sports, with our gymnastics program and skiing, we have that deadline of mid-February as well. Our goal and what we've been charged with by the university is to raise $3 million to cover our operating costs for the next 2 years. It's averaged out to be about 1.5 per year. So a tall order, to say the least, but one that we've made some great headway through some extremely generous donations from alum and supporters of our program. And we're kind of hitting that round the corner in those crucial next couple weeks as we drive towards that goal.
And so yours is 1.5, so it's different for each sport, but the deadline seems to be sort of the same.
Yeah, it's right before the Board of Regents will meet again in late February. And again, been charged for all of our programs to come with the sufficient funds at that time to help sustain our viability the next couple of years here. I'm hopeful that we're able to do that. For us, and in terms of our ways that we're going about that, there's a bunch of ways and methods you can get involved. SaveSeaWolfHockey.com through our Save the Seawolf Hockey Committee has upstarted that. Has all the information there and how you can get involved, whether it's through our virtual raffle, a 50-50 split the pot raffle that we have going on right now, ways to donate and pledge, one-time donations or multi-year pledges. Also ways you can just text in, text UA Hockey to 41444 to donate, as well as some merchandise with our Save Seawolf Hockey logo, which is a fantastic logo set up by the committee, and ways that you can get involved and help support our cause.
You know, before we get to Sparky and your situation with the university, I just want to say each one of your sports, you're talking skiing, hockey, gymnastics, that there are young children coming up through the community that are starting out on, recreational hockey leagues or, gymnastics clubs or, certainly Nordic Ski Club or skiing at Alyeska. I mean, there's a great feeder population for all of your sports. And I wonder if you think, and I'll go to Matt for this, whether you think that is actually where some of your biggest supporters are going to come from, people who, they may have a child who's in this sport and they're, wanting them to aspire to continue. Do you think that some of that support's going to come because these are the kinds of sports that really have a pool of young people coming up practicing them? So what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, Kathleen, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of what our you speak of a grassroots effort, which is what we're undertaking here, and whether it's for the skiing or gymnastics or, of course, our program in hockey, it starts with your youth. There's over 10,000 registered players, hockey players, in the city of Anchorage, and I can't speak to the skiing or gymnastics side, but I can tell you in my little world, my kids have been involved with both, with Junior Nordic and doing tumbling classes in gymnastics. So certainly I think it's an investment in our future whatever sport you're talking about, and in particular hockey, it's the youth we're investing in terms of giving them something to reach for, something to aspire to. It's a big deal having collegiate athletes around and influencing our youth. It creates a healthy environment, goal setting, all those things that you talk about and hear about. I think it's vital for a healthy community. And, I think that's part of the investment and part of the support we're hoping for and looking to in support of our program.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna go to Sparky next, but we're actually going to take a little break right now for just one moment, and I'll come back and reintroduce our guests. But you are listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And today we are hosting the head coaches for three sports at UAA that are sort of on the chopping block, but with a challenge whether or not these teams could raise their own funding to cover 2 years of their expenses. So we have Sparky Anderson, who's the Nordic and Alpine ski coach at UAA and has been for more than 13 years. Matt Curley of the hockey team is relatively more a newcomer, came on board in 2018 and has been involved in really trying to rebuild a team that has had many high points and sometimes has to go through rebuilding, and that's the job he took on. And then we also have Marie-Sophie Bogash, who came to UAA from Germany as a student to compete in gymnastics and became a professional pilot while she was at UAA, and actually came back for a master's in interdisciplinary. But while she was back studying for her master's, she ended up being an assistant coach at the UAA gymnastics team. And eventually, when their head coach left, she was offered the opportunity to lead that team. And shortly after that, they were all confronted with a pretty serious decision by UAA and eventually endorsed by the UAA Board of Regents that their sports would be eliminated because of financial difficulties the university is facing. But they did hold out the thought that if they could raise the money to support themselves, perhaps they could continue their sport. And they have real, you know, real numbers and real deadlines. If you are listening to this program and you were a UAA athlete or a student at UAA and have questions about it, let us know at 550-8433. Or we will keep checking our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So anyway, we were just in the midst of kind of introducing each sport and what its challenge is, and we did not quite get to Sparky. So we're with you now, Sparky. Tell us what the ski team is facing. What is your arrangement with the university? How much do you have to make?
Right. Well, we took a little different approach. Our total is $628,000. Half in cash, as Marie-Sophie said, and then half in pledges. So we got the news, and earlier in the summer, obviously the 19th of August, which will be burned in my memory forever. But it's not. This isn't our first time kind of dodging the guillotine here for skiing or hockey. If you remember back in 2016, the then-President Johnson wanted to eliminate both sports at both campuses in Fairbanks and Anchorage. So we took a different approach this time around. We did, of course, all the advocacy that we could, made sure that we had lots of people writing letters to the regents, and then kind of waited with bated breath for that meeting on the 10th of September to find out our fate. I think we made some pretty good points as to why it would be a bad idea to cut us. That decision brings us underneath, to lose all three teams brings the university down to nine teams, which means you lose your NCAA Division II membership privileges. So you'd have to add a team back in. And so rather than, at the two teams that they were talking about were men's volleyball and men's lacrosse. And I don't know when the last time you saw a couple guys tossing a lacrosse ball on the park strip, but I'm guessing never. So it seemed like a bad idea, so we sort of came up with a plan to propose new legislation that would allow skiing to count as one of the team sports in the states of Puerto Rico, Alaska, and Hawaii, which is the way NCAA does things. So we vetted that through the NCAA, and this is all just the ski staff sitting around, staying up late at night, trying to make this happen on Zoom calls. And ultimately, we were able to push that through so that we could stay, and that's why we still have a component of skiing still left at the university. So we had kind of a foot in the door, and so our total cash goal was reduced by less than half, well, about half. And then we're sitting around, so half of that is $314,000, and I thought, my God, how are we going to do this? And my wife, Diana, says, well, you just need to get 314 people that give you $1,000 this year and $1,000 next year, and it kind of simplified it, and you got to thinking, you know, maybe this is possible. And then my daughter, Kaya, came in and said, she was listening, and she said, "Hey, I've got $1,000 from the work that I've been doing and all my odd jobs, and I want to be the first one." So she basically came in and was the first 314er. So that's where we're at with it. We kind of compartmentalized the pledges and the cash, which for us has been good because a lot of people don't budget for 2 years out, and that's where we're trying. That's our biggest challenge is on the pledge side.
Okay, so that it's kind of a heartwarming story that your family was there with you and that your daughter stepped up and made the first contribution. At least they've got your back, right? Let me ask you a question that I think, and I'll ask each one of you individually, but I thought this might be something that the audience is thinking, you know, should we have sports when we have to cut some academic programs? And you know, I think you probably each have a take on this. You've touched on it a little bit, but let's go through each one of you. And maybe you've had people step up to you and say, "Look, I'd love to support you, but," you know. So how do you answer a question like that? Who say, "Gee, sports feels like the frills. You know, we need the labs, we need the classroom, you know, blah, blah, blah." What do you say? And let's start with you, Marie-Sophie. Has anybody said that to you? And what are your thoughts about that, you know, the role of athletics in the academic world?
Nobody actually asked me that to my face yet, but I absolutely understand that issue. And I think overall UAA has been in a position where there's clearly room for improvement in the revenue generation side. And I think that's important to note all across campus and even our community campuses, how we can become a little bit more financially stable. And I think that's that holds true for the academic side as well as for the athletic side. And one of the important things to remember is that oftentimes athletics is the door to the university. So Sparky touched on it a little bit earlier. The sports teams do increase enrollment. We put people in the classrooms too. And we're kind of sometimes that entry door to our university, and also the brand of the Seawolves. Where the athletic teams are definitely one of the best ambassadors for it. And we also do teach real skills. We all see ourselves as teachers. We all love, you know, giving back to the younger generations. And we try to really emphasize the couple things that Matt already touched on as well, like how to set goals, how to do time management. I think that our student athletes across the board are really, really good students as well. So a lot of professors actually really appreciate having student athletes in their classes. And I mean, I just took classes until May, so I worked really close together with some of the professors that are obviously still there. And we have a great relationship with them, and they are really impressed usually by our student athletes. So I think that it's important to look at revenue generation within our universities across the board. Mm-hmm. And I would really hope that there is no more academic or athletic program cuts, because both are detrimental.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Matt, in hockey? Anybody say to you, "Gosh, I wish I could support you, but if they're having to cut, you know, academic departments, I can't"? Does that ever come up, or what's your thought about that?
No, it hasn't really come up, but it's certainly a fair and valid point. Something I've kind of joked with is, you know, Harvard University has existed long before Harvard hockey and will continue to do so. But I think what's important is that I don't think one is exclusive to the other. And I think it's a partnership, and it's an important marriage that creates a healthy community environment on campus. I think it creates a better partnership within the community, and it just uplifts the overall collegiate experience. And I think it's important to have both vibrant athletic and athletic programs. You know, in terms of our just our presence, and I think I can speak to the women's gymnastics team and Sparky's kids and the ski team. You know, with our three sports, we include three of the top four GPAs within our athletic department, and that sets a standard with other community, or excuse me, other campus members and other students to serve as role models, to serve as a standard, if you will, of academic excellence. So I don't think it's not one without the other, or trying to save one academic program at the expense of an athletic program. I think it really, there's ways to have both, and having two healthy programs in academics and athletics leads to an overall healthier university.
And how about you, Sparky? Has that come up? I think about skiing. You know, you're not at the Alaska Airlines Center playing basketball where everybody sees you. You know, you're out on the slopes. Do you feel that the fact that maybe people don't have eyes on you all the time makes it seem like, oh, out of sight, out of mind? I guess, you know, if we don't fund that, that's not a big deal. On the other hand, I learned reading that the ski team is older than the hockey team at UAA. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, if anybody brought those issues up to you about if we have to cut academics, we're going to cut sports before academics, you know, anything about the tension between academics and athletics.
Yeah, it's existed for a long time. We've gone through, since 2007, we've gone through four presidents, four chancellors, three athletic directors. So I think anytime you have, I see athletics as a tool that the university sometimes uses well and other times hasn't. But certainly I think when those instructions to how that tool operates aren't passed along properly, you kind of lose sight of what it can do for you. So, I have had conversations with faculty about that. And I think that, at least in the conversations I've had, everybody agrees that we're all fighting for the same thing. We all want a vibrant campus. We want to fill classrooms. We want to drive students to campus. And I think that actually the outreach that the ski team does outside the athletic department is one of our strengths. We're out at Kincaid, we're at Alyeska, we're at Arctic Valley, we're at Hilltop. And so we're actually interfacing with the public a lot. It's not just something that you come to the stadium and watch some really good basketball and volleyball players play. We're actually out there skiing with kids, with parents, and we're telling our story. So to me, it is really important, and I think probably that's why I've had the opportunity to have those conversations with there's multiple parents that I know that work at the university. Their kids are ski racers, Nordic and Alpine, I think those are good, healthy conversations, and they need to happen more often.
Yeah. I'm going to take a caller. We have Adam is on the line. Hi, Adam. I gather you have a question for Sparky. So welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I do have a question for Sparky. I was just wondering, when this process started, I think the initial proposal was to cut the entire ski team, but then as it sort of developed, at this point, it's only the Alpine component of the team that's proposed for dismissal, and the cross country component remains. But I understand that cross country, or that the ski team is kind of unique in that men and women compete on the same team, and cross country and Alpine compete on the same team. I was just wondering if you could describe that, and is it possible to be competitive with only, as I understand it, about half the team?
Yeah, that's a good point, and that's one of the surprises to us, and I guess it wouldn't be a surprise probably to people that aren't involved at the NCAA, but our team was chopped in half, not men or women, which I guess we sort of anticipated, because skiing is two sports, but it's not alpine or Nordic. It's just, it's a men's ski team and a women's ski team. We compete in four events. Two of them are Nordic and two of them are alpine. So we're a lot like the track team. And a good analogy that I continue to use is it would be like telling the track team, hey, you guys can go to these meets, but you can only run the 800 and not the 100. And you can do the pole vault, but you can't do the long jump. Sorry, it's just not going to happen. So that's effectively what happened to us. So we've lost the ability to compete in half of the events at a championship, which makes you far less competitive. You know, we've been a top 10 nationally ranked program for close to 20 years now. And so losing, you lose the ability to compete in half those events, that hurts a lot. And nobody wants that, alpine or Nordic. And I think all of us consider ourselves skiers. A lot of the kids ski both alpine and Nordic. So it's really, and not competitively, but for fun. And it's just a great community out there that I think is supportive of one another. But yeah, no, it's really two teams, but it's a men's team and a women's team. And one of the coolest things about skiing is that we all compete together at a championship. So you've got alpine men athletes, alpine women athletes, and on the Nordic side as well, and they're all a band of brothers and sisters. So it's a really cool sport. And a lot of them, you know, the level is so high. A lot of these kids compete at the World Cup level or close to it. So it's an exciting group of kids to watch locally. And if we lose that ability here in Alaska, it's gone forever. So it's really, really important to keep this healthy and thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adam, anything else? I think we answered his question. We have a couple minutes before we need to take another break, and I'd like to talk to you about your athletes. You know, how much of their time is going into trying to fundraise? And I imagine for coaches, it may be becoming your full-time job at this point. So could you talk a little bit about your athletes and their involvement in fundraising? And I'll start with you, Matt. I also embedded in this is this thought about resilience with athletes. I think about them going, putting everything on the field or everything on the wherever they're playing. You know, they give it all, and sometimes they win and sometimes they lose. So taking a blow like this, how are your athletes handling it? And are they resilient, or is it individual kids really rise to the challenge, or is there even a feeling like, gee, athletes shouldn't have to do this fundraising? So let's start with you, Matt. What's going on with your athletes?
Yeah, so early on in the process, the guys were very active and prior to that first Board of Regents meeting back in September and getting the word out and being out, with their signs and being active in terms of getting that extension, and which we did, which was great. And then in the time since, they've helped in various ways through social media and posting stuff and doing stuff that I'm certainly better at, or they're better at than me in terms of the social media and getting the word out. But a lot of it for us has, you know, when those guys came here, you know, they came here to be student athletes, to do well in the classroom, to represent the university well on the ice, and that was their job. They were charged with that task. So as we've kind of entered into our fundraising phase here, we've kind of taken that burden, if you will, and allowed those guys to continue to compete with what they could on the ice and in the weight room, and then certainly fulfilling their academic obligations and letting us handle the extracurriculars of the fundraising activity. So they've been very resilient. Certainly we've had our challenges, with the season being canceled on top of the program being in jeopardy. So it certainly has had its challenges, but I've been very happy with the group and proud of their efforts and continuing to represent the logo with grace and integrity, and hoping that we get the opportunity to continue to do that after this season.
All right. You know, we're going to take a tiny break right now. We do have a call in for Marie Sophie. But we're going to take a tiny break. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we're hosting three of the coaches from UAA in gymnastics and skiing and hockey, who are all engaged in a fundraising campaign to try to save their athletic programs. They got the word in August and September that the university could no longer support them after this year. Yet there was an opportunity. If they could raise funds, they might be able to save their program. So during this hour, we've been talking to them about what goal they had to meet, when do they have to meet it, how are they doing. And we were just talking about the idea of athletes needing to raise money while they go to school and play in athletics. And we were just speaking with Matt Curley of the hockey team. And, you know, one of the things that has happened in addition to this news from the university about funding was COVID. And so many teams have not had their regular season. So as we go through the coaches, I'll ask you a little bit about how COVID also affected you. If we've got questions for us, we're at 550-8433, and I'll check our email. And I think we've got an email coming in that I'll get to here quickly. But we were just going to go through the coaches, but I'm going to welcome Terry on, who has a question for Marie-Sophie. So, Terry, go ahead. What is your question for Marie-Sophie?
Hi. Yeah, so I had a quick question just regarding Title IX. I read an article that the UAA gymnastics team was established because of a Title IX lawsuit. And with all this going on, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how that plays into the cuts and what it may mean for the gymnastics team? That's a really interesting question. So it is correct. The women's gymnastics team was established because of a Title IX lawsuit. That lawsuit was filed in 1979 and actually counts as one of the pioneer lawsuits in the United States for Title IX issues. And as a direct result, with a consent decree in 84, and then the establishment in 84, the women's gymnastics team came to be. And we've obviously looked very closely into that. And right this second, it does not look like this consent decree can save us. But it certainly points to a really important issue, maintaining opportunities for women and for even, you know, the young kids who are growing up, the young girls who are growing up, looking up to collegiate athletes and seeing their opportunities in that as well. As of right now, with the cuts, I've raised that question to the department as well, seeing how, you know, our Title IX composition will look like if, for example, one of the teams is saved and the other two aren't, or vice versa, or something that, you know, could happen. And it would definitely bring our percentages out of whack a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how well the department is going to be able to cope with that. I think that they've addressed that in multiple articles as well, where they're, of course, very positive about their ability to maintain Title IX compliance, even if, you know, one or all or just some of the teams are eliminated. But that's certainly a really important factor to keep in mind. We're really supporting on our team, especially, we're really trying to preserve the opportunities for women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you for that question, Terry. And I'm going to stay with you, Marie-Sophie. I was asking about the athletes having the responsibility of having to raise money. Could you speak to that? What, you know, how your athletes have responded to that? We talked about resilience and whether they just see this as another challenge, or did they take it as a body blow? So what's happening on your team, and what is their attitude?
Our gymnastics team is very involved with the fundraising, and they really want to be. It's really amazing to see how much commitment they have for this team. We actually have an incoming class of 9 people, which is one of the largest incoming classes we've ever had. And it was really amazing to see that instead of, you know, packing their bags and leaving as soon as they found out, they really stepped up to this occasion. And they constantly ask, what can I do now? What can we do next? How are we going to make more money? They've, you know, dug through a lot of information out there, how we can continue our fundraising efforts, what grants are out there to apply to, what foundations might sponsor gymnastics. It really is a full team effort for us. That is certain. I think that they're certainly one of the strongest group of women I've ever worked with. And it does add up, though. As we've pointed out as well, our season got canceled.
Due to COVID.
Exactly, due to COVID. Of course, that was a big blow on top of everything else. So I think we're all really excited for Christmas break, taking the time to recharge a little bit. And, I mean, yeah, we've still had our really high academic goals. And with finals week being this week, we're still working really hard on achieving those. And so it's definitely been a lot. And you can tell that, you know, we've just been presented with challenge after challenge after challenge, it feels like. But we can also see within our team that we have amazing chemistry. We have a really good team atmosphere despite all of this. And I think that is thanks to all the challenges that they've encountered in the last 15 to 20 years of their sport. And I'm really excited to continue this path with them, and hopefully for years to come as well.
All right. Thank you so much, Marie-Sophie. And I'm going to go to Sparky. And actually, I'm going to start with Sparky, same question for you, your team's resilience and, you know, how are they involved in fundraising. But I'm going to go ahead and welcome Kathy onto Hometown Alaska. She has a question specifically about Seawolf hockey. I'm sorry, this is not a question for Sparky. It's a question for Matt. Kathy, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, I just wanted Matt to address the importance Seawolf hockey to the community of Anchorage, how perhaps our alums have stayed in the town, very similar to gymnastics and skiing, and formed businesses, have successful businesses throughout the town, and also have coached hundreds and thousands of our youth hockey players. What will it mean if we lose the hockey program?
That's for you, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy, for the question. I think it's the lifeline for youth hockey in our community. There's been countless number of former Seawolves that have stayed here, that have started families here, that have started businesses, that work as firefighters, teachers, small business owners, that have contributed in countless numbers of ways to the economic growth of our city and state, that have contributed to the health and well-being and development of our youth in Anchorage and throughout the state. So to lose that pipeline would be not only detrimental, but, you know, really, you know, catastrophic to the whole youth movement in our sport. And it would truly be a tragedy to see that happen. And I think, you know, Sparky had mentioned in terms of bringing people up here to our state and to be community members and to stay here in Alaska. It's certainly, I know our program has done a tremendous job of that through 40 years of our existence, to allow young men throughout the world to come here and to settle here, call Alaska and call Anchorage their homes. And by doing so, have contributed in countless numbers of ways to not only youth hockey, but in all areas of our community. And I think it's been a vitally important outlet in terms of that development and what our program does well after those guys hang up the skates.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that question, Kathy, and I need to transition over to Sparky. And actually, we've got about 10 minutes left, one of the things I really wanted to get to was, I think individually, all of you mentioned to me the idea that the fact that athletics might need to pay or participate in fundraising is probably not going away, even if you achieve your goals this time. And you all had interesting things to say about it. Right now, there are other sports at UAA that are not challenged with this fundraising, but I'm going to you, Sparky. You did mention to me that you, in the future, you sort of think fundraising may be a part of having an athletic team on the collegiate level. And I'm curious whether you're seeing this trend across the country. So could we start with you, Sparky?
Yeah, I think that moving forward, we expect to have less financial support from the university. I would hope that at some point, as Chancellor Sandeen stated, in a couple of years, this levels off and we can, and it becomes less volatile so that we can plan and budget and recruit and do the work that we're doing. I think that all the teams are going to end up having to raise some percentage of their operating budget. You know, there are certain things that teams need. There's certain things that teams want. I think that we should at least be funded for what we need and maybe fundraise for some of the things that we want. You know, the website that we have, 314er.com, 314er.com, is something that we set up to be a long-term driver for us for getting the things that we want in the future. So we've got this website set up that's right now, it's producing for us. It's been working pretty well, but I would expect that website to be around in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we'll have to use, you know, for the next decade in order to be a competitive, thriving program. And I think a lot of the other programs are going to have to do something similar. You can't just keep the gun to the back of one person's head and the whole department. It won't work that way. So, you know, I think everyone's going to have to grab the rope and pull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let me go back to you, Marie-Sophie, because you did share with me a report you made. You proposed a lot of ways that the gymnastics team could become a revenue generator for the university. I imagine you share this idea that continuing to find outside funding is going to be a role in college athletics. But tell us a little bit about your perspective on how gymnastics might supplement its income, its revenue to the university.
Absolutely. I definitely share that idea. And I think that, you know, when they first approached us with the decision that Chancellor Sandeen was going to propose to the Board of Regents to eliminate our three sports, I immediately looked at putting together a proposal to show that with time, of course, with a period of adjustment, we can become much more self-sustainable. And we have a lot of programs across the nation that I worked pretty closely with over a few days to put together that proposal, who do some of these things, for example, hosting the big club competition. Rutgers University does it every year. They make a tremendous amount of revenue from that because club kids from all over the state or even the country travel to those invitational meets. And that's something that we have the arena for. We're equipped for it. We have the staff that can, you know, handle those kinds of invitationals as well. And that's one of the factors. Obviously, we have an amazing facility as well that is not used very much. And that's definitely in COVID times, that's difficult. And that's why it was a long-term model, not to be implemented today, but to be worked on over a couple of years in a transition period to make us self-sustainable. And, you know, making better use of that facility by either renting it out or potentially even hosting our own classes in other universities. Some of the coaches have to teach classes. That's part of their, you know, job, and that's how they get either students in the classroom, or if it's like a fitness class, they even open it up to the general public. It works really well in some of the Californian schools, for example. So there was a lot of different ways that we proposed, and that the entire team was involved with and said, no, I'll volunteer to teach a couple fitness classes a semester, and really creative ways like that. Or Seattle Pacific University, they used to run a full club gymnastic, like a full club out of their facility with the team being coaches. And of course, we have a little bit of a different place up here in Alaska, so we wouldn't really attempt that, but something like a mother-child lesson or something like that is definitely doable and can boost our outreach and, of course, our revenue as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got about 2 minutes. Let me go to you, Matt, on hockey and whether you foresee a future where you are contributing through community fundraising to your sport at the university level. And then maybe let's just go quickly after Matt speaks to each of you what you want the listeners to remember from to take away from this show. So Matt, just briefly, do you see ways that hockey could begin to, you know, over a long-term sustainable plan, start to contribute financially to its costs here at the university?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, 30 years ago, and I know that's a long time ago, but there was a time when the Sullivan Arena was selling out 6,000 people a game, and ticket sales, parking, concessions, that's all revenue for the university. So there's certainly ways for that to happen to help our own cause. And then, you know, like the academic side of it in athletics, it's not one or the other. It's got to be a partnership. So I do think there's going to be some responsibility on the hockey program as well as all the other athletic programs here and around the country to help their own cause by some fundraising methods and ways to help generate revenue, if not through their sports and doing it in the stands and ticket sales and whatnot, maybe through other philanthropic opportunities such as fundraising and private donations.
Mm-hmm. You see the world changing. You know, the university not able to really sustain these sports and the sports needing to step up and offer some support, some of the costs. So let me go to you, Sparky. We're getting down here. I think we talked a little bit about that. What I was really wanting to say is the short amount of time we've got left, what do you want to leave people thinking from this program?
Mostly I just want everybody to know that we're true partners with the community. We really want to be engaged. I think that we've done a good job. We can always do better. That's our goal, and we're hoping that the community returns that support. And let's keep this thing rolling for a long, long time.
All right. Well, you hear the music. You know we're out of time. I have to thank our guests very much. Sparky Anderson, ski coach at UAA, Matt Curley, the hockey coach, and Marie-Sophie Bogash of the gymnastics program. Next week on Hometown Alaska, we talk a bit about participatory democracy in the wake of our unprecedented national election and unusual transfer of power to a new administration. We hope with guests from Alaska Common Ground and the League of Women Voters. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. We'll was our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.